Hey, bosses, it's Derek. I want to tell you about our Patreon account before we start this episode because it actually ties in with everything we are talking. We're doing all things YouTube on this episode. Johnny has been doing quite well. In fact, so well that he shared all his financials, but only to our Patreon members. You can find out exactly how much he's making on YouTube and how he does it right now in our bonus episode found on our Patreon account. It's investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon. We go over all things YouTube with this episode, some ideas, how to monetize, and maybe how you can start your own side hustle through YouTube. But if you want to go deep into the financials and exactly what Johnny has been making, like I said, head over to our Patreon. It's investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon. All right. I hope you enjoy this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? It's been a while. I got Johnny on the other end. It's episode 279 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Johnny, what's happening?
It is good to be back. I feel like it's been a while since I've spoken to you.
I'm sure people have noticed we're doing a little bit less podcasts, but I think we want to focus more on quality over quantity.
Yes. Quantity over quality. Let's do it.
It's been a while and I made it go a little bit longer. I kind of have a funny story. I was a little bit late today. I apologize for that. First of all, I'm not a morning person.
Okay.
I've been doing marathon training. I'm going to run the Sydney Marathon in Australia coming up in a couple weeks, and it sucks, honestly. I'm so not into it, but I'm committed. So I'm going to do it. I had to wake up extra early and get my run out of the way this morning. And okay. Another reason I was late, Johnny, if you go to my Instagram, you'll see a story on there. And it's very similarly tied to what I was doing this morning, except this guy has a little bit different strategy. And the police decided to block the road. And you'll see why if you look at my story right now.
All right. If you guys want to check it out, it's Derek Radio on Instagram. And oh, my God, that's me running naked.
I thought it might have been you. I was like, Johnny's running late, too.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
The best part is someone's like giving him a water like he's in a marathon. So if you can't see it, we're talking YouTube on this episode, and I should create a YouTube channel of just all the crazy stuff I see in Los Angeles on the daily. There was a naked guy running along the freeway this morning in the middle of traffic.
That is hilarious. Only in LA where you'll see everything.
Yeah, exactly. It was weird that the cops actually got there really quick and they started to block off the road, and I was backed up a little bit, but the people behind me were totally screwed. They're going to be there for a long time. So oh, I think no. I got out just in time.
Is it even illegal to run naked?
I mean, definitely had some other issues, I think. So he'll probably escape normal charges. But if you or I did it, I think we'd be in trouble.
Unless we're doing it on OnlyFans and we could actually monetize that content and make money from it.
I've actually seen that on that same road just down the street with a woman that looked a lot more beautiful than that guy. Well, let's talk about it, Johnny. I don't know if everyone's aware that listens to the podcast, because I think, you know, you have multiple different audiences, I guess, and you're kind of a big deal on YouTube.
Well, you know what they say is not everyone has a face built for radio. No, okay. So we actually surveyed the Invest Like a Boss audience, you know, a few times, and we asked, where have you heard of the podcast? And in the beginning, you know, 70 or 80% of it came from my YouTube channel or came from me. But I think over the years, it's diversified and it's grown. But definitely there's a big portion of the listeners who have either followed me from even before my YouTube days when I was just traveling and writing books and, you know, kind of just blogging. And I'm sure a lot of some of the listeners at least have found me since then, because I do have a link in my about me to check out the podcast.
Yeah. So I think even when I started the podcast, which was early 2020, you weren't super serious about YouTube and it's kind of turned into your full-time gig. So the podcast Invest Like a Boss has been going since 2016. Back then you really weren't posting on YouTube very often, if you even had a YouTube account back then, right?
So for kind of a background, I guess, I've actually had a YouTube channel since like 2008, maybe 2009. I was one of the kind of beginners, but I never monetized it I never posted regularly. It was just kind of a place to store videos so I could send my friends and family. It was like my scuba diving videos and my Muay Thai videos. And it wasn't until, I think it was 2020 during COVID, when I was stuck in Sri Lanka, I decided, hey, let me just make videos full time because I have nothing else to do. I had sold my business. Investing was kind of on this kind of a weird time. If you guys remember back then, we were really unsure what was going to happen. And I was like, you know what? I have plenty of free time. Let me just make some travel videos of showing my life in Sri Lanka during COVID. And that's when it started taking off.
So what was your inspiration behind the content you created? So, you said you had extra time, you're in Sri Lanka, which is kind of an interesting place already. I mean, how many people, at least Americans, really know that much about Sri Lanka? What did you decide that you were going to even talk about?
So my first video that I made was literally me showing like the place I was living. It was kind of a crazy place. It was like a villa with 7 rooms. One of the rooms was with this this German girl, someone else from like Israel, there's a guy from Ukraine. It was just like a really mismatch of 7 travelers / surfers living in this big shared villa across the street from the beach. And it was like $300 a month. And I think that was kind of interesting for people to see, these deals during COVID and me, running across the street, hiding from the police to go surfing and stuff like that. And then the next video was me trying to get to the east of the island, to this little like this hidden surf point. I think people liked it because it was literally the only travel content on YouTube during COVID.
That's true, because no one else could really travel. So that's a good point. So can you explain for people that maybe aren't super familiar what vlogging is?
Yeah, so vlogging is basically a one-person team where you're holding a camera, whether it's an iPhone or an actual camera, and you're doing kind of a selfie view where you're talking to the camera. You're just taking someone along on your day. Some vlogs like Casey Neistat or people who kind of popularized it, they kind of just show what they do every day. They might not even have a theme. They're just doing a daily vlog. For me, I try to do kind of a hybrid where I try to have a topic for my videos, even though I'm uploading them quite often every other day since COVID started. And I do show my daily life, but I try to have kind of more of I try to show more of a topic or have a actual title for each one. Not just like vlog 362,
Yeah, I was actually listening to a podcast the other day with a reality star, and they're talking about, kind of behind the scenes of reality TV and how they, hype things up and the producers, change things. Obviously, nothing that really surprised me. But, he said something interesting that was, no one's life, no matter how amazing it seems, even like Elon Musk or someone like that, no one's life is really that exciting. So how different is your YouTube channel from your actual everyday life? I mean, I don't watch all your videos. I've watched a good amount of your videos, though. And it's like sometimes it's like you just have to do normal life stuff. Like you have to run errands or go to the store or whatever. Like, why would that be interesting to someone?
Well, for my channel, I think it's interesting because I'm in Ukraine and there happens to be a war right now. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just going to the grocery store, people are interested to see, what it's like. And because it's in Ukraine during war, sometimes, for example, during winter, there was no electricity and it was me shopping in with a flashlight. So that was interesting for people. Even now during normal times, people can see the prices compared to, somewhere else where the products are available here and not somewhere else. Somebody commented that they're surprised that sriracha was available here, but in the US there's a shortage.
It's been tough to find.
Yeah. So there's all these, I would say I would show everything once because for me, it would be interesting if someone from another country, especially like an American living in another country, showed how they do laundry or showed how they take a taxi or show how they take the metro. I will show all that once. But I agree that if you show it every day repetitively, it gets boring. And that's why I try not to.
So I'm glad you brought up Ukraine. If anyone's new to the show, Johnny has been living in Kyiv since before the war started. I'm sorry, Kyiv. That's still in my head. That is Kyiv. So do you feel like maybe since your YouTube's kind of taken off and you've been doing the Ukraine thing, I know you took a trip to Thailand a few months back, and I think you had mentioned to me that some of your videos there didn't do as well. Do you kind of feel like you're stuck in a niche now that you're the Ukraine guy?
Yeah, 100%. And whether we like it or not, people don't follow our channels solely based on our personality or their love for us. They follow it for a topic. So let's say, some of my favorite YouTubers, like there's Doug DeMuro, this automotive guy. He does car reviews. You know, he's interesting as a person, but I don't watch him for him. I watch him for the cars. So if he started, you know, branching out and making videos about something like food or travel, I probably wouldn't watch it. I might watch one just to see how it is, but I guarantee if he just, you know, stopped reviewing cars, he will lose 80% of his audience, you know, if not more.
I think that's a good point to go off the car tangent. There's another guy I'm very familiar with. He used to be my neighbor. He does a channel called The Smoking Tire, which is all about cars. They do a lot of cool stuff, cars and stuff, and they do a podcast as well. And they actually split up their podcast where they talk about cars separately from their YouTube videos that they actually review cars. Because even though the topic was the same thing, they're both about cars. One was just a podcast style where they're sitting in a studio, and one is they're actually driving cars. He said you could tell the tune out was insane, like towards the podcast, that would drag down their channel. So like YouTube is like a niche within a niche, even like it kind of puts you in a box. I've noticed that you really have to, once you have something that works, that's all they let you do. Have you kind of experienced the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't want to believe it. I thought I could be different. And it's funny, I would meet people who are just starting YouTube and they always tell me, no, I'm going to be different. I'm going to make it work this time. There's a guy that I had lunch with. He says, I'm going to make mine half Ukrainian, half English. Like one episode's gonna be Ukrainian, one's gonna be English.
That's and a I terrible said to him, idea.
I said, that is the worst idea possible. Like you're gonna lose all you're gonna lose both audiences. You just can't do it. So this is the $1,000 tip. Be consistent. With the length of the video, the language of the video, the content of the video, the type of the video, here's what pisses me off actually about not only YouTube, but all content creation, whether it's Instagram, TikTok, or anything, and even like shows on TV, right? You need to just follow a format. So whether it's, 10 second funny intro, then, showing the scenery, then explaining what's going to happen, then stupid joke, then this, you just have to follow that same almost scripted reality show format. And I hate it. I refuse to do it. And that's actually why my channel is not as big as it could be, because I just refuse to do it.
I feel like it kind of puts you in a box, and it really kind of kills your creativity. Even though you think I have a YouTube channel, I can make whatever videos I want, you really can't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've actually been pigeonholed a few times. My channel originally was about Muay Thai, and actually, it did all right. I had a couple of videos that did a lot of views, not because of me being a great Muay Thai fighter, but I was at a camp that had good Muay Thai fighters. We had like Roger Huerta and other like UFC fighters. I was showing kind of like the camp conditions and our training, things like that. So if I just stuck with that, I probably would have done well. But instead, I decided to start uploading my scuba diving videos on there, which is a completely
different
audience,
I think. Yeah.
So then neither of those did well. And then when I started working online, I started doing kind of digital nomad stuff. I started, talking about that, not just like one type. If I had just talked about publishing books on Amazon, I probably would have done really well. But instead, every week I would, have a different subject, that was interesting, because I generally just get interested in different things. So one week would be, about Udemy courses, one week about real estate, one week about this. And that was bad for the audience.
You and I are kind of the same. Like I'm interested in so many things too. And, I started a channel like a year ago, and it's been so much harder than I thought it would be. I thought it'd be so easy just to get monetized right away. And it's really not. And then I want to talk about this. I want to talk about that. We're the kind of guys that look at our podcast. I mean, the Invest Like a Boss, we talk about different things every week, and you can't do that with YouTube. It's tough. So if you got to find one thing that works and just really focus on that.
Well, to be fair, if Invest Like a Boss was more niche, so let's say instead of, talking about every single topic, if we just, had the tagline be like Bitcoin is the boss or real estate investing is the boss, and every episode we talked about why real estate investing is the best thing in the world and that's all you should do, we would probably have a much bigger audience.
I agree. I don't know that we would enjoy doing it as much though.
Oh, I would hate doing it. And I think it would be a disservice to the listeners, because it would, pigeonhole people's brain cells. But unfortunately, that's just the way it is. So I've dug myself out of this box so many times, including in Sri Lanka. 70% of my audience was Sri Lankans, and not necessarily living in Sri Lanka, but Sri Lankans overseas working in Dubai or working in Canada that just missed home and wanted to follow a vlogger that's exploring their country.
That makes sense.
Guess what, yeah. Guess what happened when I left, when I moved to Ukraine? Like, I lost 90%
yeah, they weren't interested in Ukraine.
Yeah. They watched like the first video just to see like, you know, me going there. Then after that, it just died. I had to start over from scratch again. And then Ukraine built up. But as soon as I went to Thailand, it dropped again as well. So it's a tough world out there. It's almost better to either just take a break and not post anything, or just to start a separate channel if you want to change themes.
Yeah, it's almost like you can talk about different things, but you got to have a separate channel for everything you're interested in.
Yeah, it's silly, but that's literally, you know, that's literally what it is. I mean, at a certain point, you can have a big enough personality, especially if people start liking you for your actual personality or style. And, you know, then they'll follow you kind of, you know, depending on what you're doing, especially if you have a theme otherwise. So like, for example, you know, you can be who's that food guy that just like, you know, travels around to different places and
like Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah. Or the Big Eats guy, you know, like someone who does food challenges around the world, or someone who like does only like, you know, fast food, takeaway food. But that's still a niche. You know, mm-hmm. the niche might not be the place, but it's still a theme.
So let me talk about, we kind of joked about it in the beginning of the episode where I said, you know, iLab has been focusing on quality over quantity. And you've always kind of said on your YouTube that you do quantity. I'm not saying it's not quality, but you bust out so much content. Like you said, every other day, I think you're at least three videos a week, right?
Yeah. So the reason why I do it is, first off, if you shotgun spread, I mean, YouTube, they like it because like, yeah, they just like, you know, content, and people kind of get used to you. You know, every time they log in, they see a new video of yours and they kind of, they'll just watch it. They just kind of get used to it. The problem with mine is actually they're a little bit too long. So it's hard for someone to watch a 40-minute video every other day.
That is a lot of content.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, isn't there sorry to interrupt you. Isn't there some kind of like 9-minute rule for the ads? I thought I heard about.
Yeah. So I remember when I first started YouTube, I tried to keep my videos at 3 minutes because that's what the attention span of people was back then. But, you know, over the years, YouTube has valued longer and longer content just so you can stay on the site longer. They can show you more ads. So 9 minutes is kind of the magic number where they can show you a pre-roll ad, an ad in the middle, what they call mid-roll, and then at the end. So you definitely want it more than 10 minutes. I actually think the sweet spot now is like 15 to 20 minutes because, kind of like Netflix, right? It's really hard to get someone to sit down and watch a 2-hour Netflix movie or even an hour and a half Netflix movie. But once you start watching those 20-minute or 25-minute season episodes, how many can you watch in a row?
See how they build them in now too, a lot of the shows, they just run right into the next one. You don't even realize you're on the next episode.
Yeah, or you can't stop because there's like, you're just, oh man, I got to watch the next one.
Yep.
What we should learn is what works for Hollywood or what works for Netflix also works for YouTube, also works for TikTok, also works for Instagram. It just, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. And we would like to think people are smarter, people are different, and, you know, people will value a 50-minute, like, you know, slow format that kind of shows you the details and goes kind of more insight. But no, like, people want to be entertained. People want to be able to finish an episode, you know, before they finish their meal.
Yeah, one thing I think that does differ YouTube from, you know, Hollywood or Netflix or whoever it may be, is the amateur style. I think a lot of people like to kind of feel like this is something they could do or someone they could hang out with and relate to. I think some people really try to focus on, you know, the audio needs to be perfect, the color correction and everything. And I found that most of the YouTube audience does not care about any of that stuff.
I have realized that audio needs to be good enough where they don't, it's not painful for them to listen to you.
Right.
And then the video has to be good enough where it's not annoying to watch. But atop from that, there's very little reward, you know, from going from there to go, you know, to going from, to the, like the very best. And then the very best on, you know, yeah, you can have, if you're Marques Brownlee, which is my first, you know, my favorite tech reviewer, I really appreciate his, you know, his high fidelity, you know, shot on red, well-produced videos. But at the same time, I watch him because I like his personality. He's well-spoken. He has, you know, cool gadgets. I trust, you know, what he has to say. So I think it's kind of a cherry on top. I don't think there's that many people watching footage now just, you know, for high quality 4K aerial shots. You know, it just, that was cool, like when it first came out. But mm-hmm. I think most people watch stuff for like enjoyable, consumable content now, and not just quality.
Yeah, I agree. What kind of equipment are you shooting with? Are you just using your iPhone? Because I mean, I have a newer iPhone and they're so good now. You can shoot with 4K. And like that camera on the iPhone is better than some of the best cameras you could have got 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, so the actual image quality on iPhones is amazing. Unfortunately, the audio is just okay. So especially if you're outside and it's windy, there's a lot of like ambient noise. It actually kind of sucks. But those, like those plug-in mics, it just doesn't work for my style. Because if anyone has watched my videos, and you can check them out, just search for Johnny FD. They're kind of a vlog style where I'll do a lot of like 30-second cuts throughout the day. So I might be filming, you know, over 5 or 6 hours, but not on a, you know, not in a row, obviously. I'm filming little clips here and there. So it's really inconvenient for me to pull out my camera or even my phone and plug in a mic, make sure it works to get like a 30-second clip. It's much easier for me to just pull out the phone raw, take the clip and put it back in my pocket.
Yeah, I've even noticed with those plug-in mics, I use some of them and you don't know if they're working or not. You'll look at the video later and you go, oh, the mic didn't work. So they're kind of unreliable. But when they do work, they work pretty well.
Yeah, so those work really well for interview style, or if you're just shooting kind of, you know, a straight shot. So once in a while, I'll use a plug-in mic if I know I'm going to be in a loud place, I'm going to be talking a lot. But in general, I'll shoot, you know, raw. And other options, you know, GoPro or an Osmo, I don't know what it's called, the DJI Osmo Sport or whatever it's called, the GoPro-like thing. They all work pretty good. I actually shot one of my videos recently with it, and I asked people in the comments what they thought, you know, compared to the iPhone. And, you know, they're similar enough. I think nowadays, like pretty much all the tech that's between $500 to $1,000, it's good enough.
I think the video quality is there on all of them. It's just the audio is still tougher on a lot of those things.
Yeah.
I do have a question I want to ask you. You're in Ukraine, obviously, middle of a war. Not only that, just getting into certain situations that you're in. I've walked around with you where you're just shooting videos. And I mean, you've done it so many times now that you're just used to it. But is there any kind of like interactions where you've had, you know, trouble where people are like, don't film here, or any kind of conflicts with filming?
Yes. But actually, it's more country dependent, like culture dependent. Some cultures, they like being filmed. Like, mm-hmm. if you want people, you know, if you go to India, people want to be on camera.
I've heard that a lot about India. Yeah.
While in Ukraine, I don't know. Like, people look at me as a tourist. So they're kind of like, ah, whatever, you know, he's just a tourist. But at the same time, I try to be mindful, you know, to not to annoy somebody. That's why a lot of my shots are just kind of me holding the phone kind of like, you know, down by my waist, so I can still kind of capture the, you know, conversation. But it's mainly like I'm showing my face more, showing background more. But then I try not to put something in someone's face unless I think it's okay, you know, like, and if they kind of show me any, you know, that they're uncomfortable, they don't want it, then they'll move it away or I'll stop. But yeah, in general, I think most people don't really mind, like, unless you make, you know, I actually think the US, you know, and even there, I don't know. Like, I haven't really shot that much in the US, but I feel like when you're in your own country, in your own city, it feels more awkward than when you're abroad.
It is. When I shoot things outside my office here, I got a nice big parking lot and I'm shooting like car content. And there's a lot of older people in the neighborhood and they're walking their dogs, or they're just looky-loos. They'll walk right into the shot and be like, what's going on here? I'm like, so I'd be like, get out. What are you doing?
Yeah. But, you know, again, that's kind of the highly produced versus like a vlog, where a vlog, I welcome the walk in. I'll welcome them to be in my shot. Maybe I can have an interesting, you know,
what
conversation
kind of dog
with them.
Do you have? Tell me.
Yeah.
That's so true. I should look at it that way.
Yeah. It's different styles. I mean, you know, my mentor, the guy who brought me from, I don't remember. Actually, so I guess this is a good time to kind of go through the brief history. I went from 0 to 10,000 subscribers by my own, like through my digital nomad content. Mm-hmm. And then in Sri Lanka, I went from, you know, 10 or 15,000 to probably 100,000 through being the only travel vlogger during COVID in Sri Lanka. And then I went from it wasn't 100,000. Because that's when I got my silver play button. I probably got to like half of that, maybe, you know, 30,000, 40,000. But I got from, let's say, 50,000 to $150,000 because Baldwin bankrupt.
All right, pause it there, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out how you gain that many subscribers after we take a quick break.
All right.
This week's episode of Invest Like a Boss is sponsored in part by our friends over at Masterworks. That's right, they are back on the show. You may remember episode 192, we spoke to the CEO about the state of the art market. Well, some things have changed since then. For one, we know the stock market has been very volatile, and it's just a good reminder that we need to diversify our portfolio with alternative investments. One of those alternative investments you should take a look at is fine art. In fact, new data from UBS shows that private assets like fine art can be especially valuable when you're looking for low correlation to the stock market. Historically, the art market has moved independently of stocks. Art prices actually have increased over the last few years, and the entire art market has already passed its pre-pandemic level. But how can you take advantage of this? Well, tens of thousands of other people have already done it using Masterworks. You can invest in fine art without needing millions of dollars or an art degree to figure out who the next hot artist is going to be. Masterworks does it all for you. In fact, every painting Masterworks has sold to date has delivered a positive return to their investors. Here's a wild one. Their 15th exit was a Cecily Brown piece. It just happened a couple weeks ago. The sale price created a net annualized return of 77.3%. If you want to get in on this fine art market, we got your VIP way in. Because if you just go to Masterworks' site, you actually got to join a waitlist. But because you're an Invest Like a Boss listener, you can skip that entire waitlist and join now. But you do have to go to this special site. It's masterworks.art/ilab. That's masterworks.art/ilab. Make sure to check out important disclosures at masterworks.com/cd, and then join now and skip the waitlist when you head to masterworks.art/ilab. All right, we're back. Johnny built himself up a nice little YouTube channel, about 30, 40,000 subscribers. Things were going well. And then it popped because he met who, Johnny?
Yeah, so I met this guy named Baldwin Bankrupt in Ukraine. I had seen his videos. I liked his style. You know, I saw he had like 2 or 3 million subscribers. He was a good storyteller. He went to all this like, you know, old post or pre-USSR, you know, countries. And I met him through a guy named Harold Balder, who was a big YouTuber that I met in Sri Lanka, actually, during COVID. And me and Harold had nothing in common. Like, personality-wise, it'd be like, you know, cold fish and yogurt. Or just like, we're just complete opposites, you know? But me and Bald, we got along, you know? We're very different now, but, you know, we liked a lot of the, you know, we liked travel. We liked, I don't know. Like, actually, we didn't have that much common either, but we liked, you know, we happened to be in Ukraine at the same time. We like travel. And he kind of was in this slump where he was burnt out. He didn't want to make any more videos. So I just hang out with him, and I kind of encouraged him to start making videos again. I was in some of his videos. Like, I took him to a place in Kharkiv called Hata Zed, which is like the most dangerous hood in Ukraine. And then it was kind of it was a mutually beneficial thing where he was burnt out and he didn't want to make videos by himself anymore. So I would appear in his, and while appearing in his, I would gain some of that audience that liked my personality or wanted to check out my channel, because he would always shout me out on it. And that's how I went from having, let's say, about 50 or 70,000 to getting my silver play button, which is the 100,000 subscriber mark on YouTube, and getting probably to 150,000 or so.
And it's funny, I got to meet Baldwin Bankrupt in Ukraine. He was a cool guy. And I want to say a few months after that, my aunt, who lives in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin, calls me and she goes, "Why is Johnny in a video with Baldwin Bankrupt?" I'm like, "How do you know either of those guys?" It was just funny, the amount of reach that Baldwin Bankrupt had, that my aunt, who lives in a small town of 500 people, knew who he was and then saw you in one of his videos.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been recognized, not lately, because I haven't been in his videos in probably a year now. But yeah, when it first happened, I was recognized everywhere, not as Johnny FD, the YouTuber, but
as Bald's friend.
Bald's friend. You know, the Mongolian warlord. That was the nickname he gave me.
Oh, nice. That's funny. So that obviously boosted things into monetization, which I think we should talk about. First of all, what are the parameters to actually get monetized on YouTube?
So you would probably know better than me because you actually just started your channel. I think back then you needed 1,000 subscribers and X amount of watch hours. Has that changed?
That is still the case. They actually just released a new tier, which I'm going to pull up right now, that is a little bit lower because I think they're trying to encourage new channels because everyone's kind of said it's been a lot harder to get monetized than it used to be. So what you can do now is there's like a first, just a YouTube partner, where once you get 500 subscribers, you can actually get these things called memberships, which you can, it's kind of like a Patreon account where they kind of make people pay a little bit. You could also put merch up and you can get super fans and super chats where people can just pay you for like, hey, I really like this content. Here's a dollar type thing. So as long as you get 500 subscribers, you upload 3 videos within 90 days and you have 3,000 watch hours, you can qualify for that. The weird thing about that is I don't have 500 subscribers yet. So I'm still stuck in the twos, but I have more than enough watch hours. So I feel like I have content people want to watch, but I'm not getting subscribers. So that's been kind of frustrating.
Well, let's see if we can get you over that. What's your name on YouTube?
We just rebranded. So it used to be Car Snubs. Now it's called Petrolectric. I will post the link in our show notes. I'll put Johnny's channel there as well. It's about cars, all things cars. I'm still evolving it, trying to figure things out, as you can tell here. But if you want to check it out, it's Petrolectric. And then if you want to get fully monetized like Johnny is, you need 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours. Or you could also do shorts, which are kind of like YouTube's version of TikTok videos. That you need 10 million views, which seems like a lot. But if you get those things to take off, I've gotten TikToks to get in the millions. I haven't been having as much luck with YouTube shorts, though. I don't know if you've dealt with those at all, Johnny, on your channel.
I haven't, mainly because shorts and TikTok required you to film in portrait mode, like, you know, a vertical mode.
Vertical, yeah.
And YouTube is in landscape mode. And I realized that I can either make really good shorts and okay YouTube videos, or I can make really good, you know, YouTube videos and just forget about the shorts. My channel at this point is good enough where I don't think me focusing so much time and energy making shorts is actually going to gain that many more subscribers. I'd rather just stay organically on this path. But my advice to anyone who's starting out is actually to do both.
Right.
To have a very consistent schedule, whether it's one, you know, I would say minimum one video per week. Ideally, it'd be 2 or 3 videos a week. The every other day videos or everyday videos, it's really hard to do. Like unless, you know, especially in the beginning when you're not making money from it and you have another job, I wouldn't do it. Like the only reason why I'm able to do it is this is my only, you know, real job at this point. And a second, like I just like making videos and I could bang them up pretty quick. Because
I think that's why mine's gone so slow. I only drop a video every 2-3 weeks. And it's like, it takes so long to edit and do everything. And I still need an income coming in. So it's really hard to justify like, hey, I'm just going to do this, you know, 2 or 3 days a week all day for each of those days. It's really hard for me to justify that when nothing's coming in and it's costing me money.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, I'm going to give you guys a little secret since you guys have listened for so long. This would normally be for like a Patreon exclusive or something. But per video, I make about $200 or $300. So it's not like it's not a ton of money, but it's pretty consistent. So I know that
that's a decent full time job if you spent one full day working on it.
Yeah. So like, you know, for me, it's like one day of filming and one day of editing, you know? So it's kind of technically 2 days of work, but really I'm not working 8 hours a day, right? So.
And when you got prices in Ukraine, you know, that $200-$300 goes a lot further than Los Angeles.
And I'm doing stuff I actually want to do anyways. Like I very seldom go and make a video just to make a video. Like I normally just film what I wanted to do anyways.
I think that's the key too. You know, you can only have so much money, but you know, if you're making enough to get by and you're doing what you want to do, that's a win-win situation.
Yeah. And you know, if I was either smarter or if I cared more about, you know, getting subscribers and just getting more money, this is what I would do and what I would recommend to everyone, right? Number one is to treat it like an actual business. And instead of just, you know, going out and making videos as like a like an artist or someone who's creative and just saying, oh, you know, I want the world to see this, or, you know, I want to do this. do the opposite. Just think of money first and say, okay, what 4 videos or 8 videos do I want to make this month? What are those titles? And I would even create the thumbnails first. Before even making the videos, I would just like be like, okay, today I'm going to make a video about this. This is the title that I've, you know, that looks like it's going to do well because it's catchy, you know, and maybe compared to other people's videos, it does well. And I'm going to take the thumbnail first, make sure it's like very, you know, catchy, you know, clip. And then I'll worry about making the video. Like that would probably be the smartest way. I would be very consistent and make it, you know, exactly 15 minutes, you know, between like 14 to 18 minutes. So like every video is exactly the same length. And I would just have it scheduled. Just say, you know what, every Friday, 7 p.m. video comes out. That's it. Done. You know, versus what I do is I just kind of live my life. I think, oh crap, I didn't make a thumbnail for that. Let me see what I can.
Do you set a particular time to go out every day? Because I know if you go into the YouTube analytics, there's actually a lot of good information. They'll tell you when your followers are on at the busiest times. Do you follow any of that, or you just kind of, I just finished editing, I'll post it now?
No, I do. I try to, like, I have a, so usually what happens for me is I'll have a bunch of videos kind of in queue, and then when I run out, then I'll like, oh crap, I need to film more. And then I have
5 or 6 I still need to edit. It's not that they're ready to go. I just don't have the time to edit them, but I have shot them.
Yeah. So I release my videos every other day at 7:30 p.m. Ukraine time. The reason why I chose that time is so people in Ukraine can see it before they sleep. But also, more importantly, I can make sure that it doesn't have any issues in the first hour that it's live. Because with copyright, the way it works is YouTube will auto-check for most things like music copyright. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is upload the video as unlisted, let it process. And a few hours later, it'll tell you, hey, you have the copyrighted music. You know, what do you want to do about it? You can edit it out. You can mute it. You can, you know, fix it and re-upload. That's not a problem. The problem is once you publish live, you'll get some assholes that have waited till you publish live to then flag it. Because then they know they can steal that revenue for the first few hours or first days. Or maybe you'll just say, forget it. I'm not going to re-edit it now because it's too late. It's already live. So, you know, those assholes would be like all the, you know, a lot of the music companies, you know, like Sony or, you know, whatever. You probably know them all.
On that subject, I did start another podcast called 1501, and I posted a video. There was a TV show called Bar Rescue, and I actually had one of the contestants on.
Okay.
And I used a tiny clip of the show that she was in, and they flagged it, but they didn't take down the video. I'm trying to see what it says.
Yeah.
Here.
But so if it says like,
it says copyright protected content found, the owner allows the content to be used on YouTube. Does that mean they would potentially take the monetization, or they just said it's okay to use?
Does it have a shared revenue next to it?
No, but that channel's not monetized yet either, so maybe that's why.
Yeah. So usually when that happens is they share the revenue. And in the beginning, I was like, okay, that's fair. I'll let them like have a 90, piece 10, of it. it's terrible for the content creator, especially if you're using a 40-second clip of their video in your 40-minute video, you know?
Right.
Like, it's unfair. So I really hate it. Like, I have a policy now where I just refuse to give a penny to these companies, especially because they actually, when you upload it as unlisted, they get a notification. They know like there's a copyright. They're just choosing to wait till after it's live to claim it. And I think that's just messed up.
Yeah. When I worked in music as management, we would get a lot of the record label would usually take care of that. But I managed a couple independent artists too, where we would get flags and we would always say, accept. We'll take the money.
Yeah. And like, it really, like, it's annoying. I'm glad that YouTube has created a few things now to change it, like editing it out, like literally just deleting those like 10 seconds or whatever it is. Here's what I've kind of learned so far is like any kind of like music video or movie or something like that. If you use more than like 3 seconds of it, they're gonna flag you.
Yeah.
So just don't, you know, like it's annoying, but it's the way it is.
There's a lot of free music options out there too, or like some kind of like subscription services too, correct?
Yeah. And I used to use, you know, some of them, but those are also bad as well. Cause as soon as you stop paying for them, even though you're technically like still okay, like, I don't know, it just, you end up getting a copyright flag from another company that then acquires that music, or, you know,
interesting. And you don't have the subscription anymore. Okay.
Yeah. So I get like, there's just all these things. I just try to avoid it in general. As I try not to use music at all. And if I do, I try to use actually like copyright free music. But yeah, it's a very complicated thing. I mean, we can literally have a whole episode about it.
Yeah.
But just try to avoid it.
Well, on the monetization, kind of getting back on track there, where are your listeners? You said Ukraine, you know, you had some Sri Lanka, you know, how much is in the US and Canada essentially? Because, you know, at least what I've seen from the podcast standpoint, those are your kind of your bread and butter listeners that you're going to get the most per ad. Is that the case with YouTube as well?
Yeah. So I'm taking a look at the last 365 days. Number one is the US, then the UK, then Canada. So, you know, number four, Ukraine is only 4%. So really it's...
Oh, interesting. It's a lot lower than I thought.
Yeah.
So do you find that to be the case that, you know, the paper ad or whatever it may be, do they give you that information? Because I'm not monetized. I don't see what I get per ad. Do they tell you made this amount per viewer in this country, or do they just not really show you?
Yeah, they'll show you your... they call it like CPM cost.
Yeah, cost per milli, which is like per thousand.
Yeah, I don't know why they call it per milli. It's really annoying.
I think it's like Greek or Latin or something.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find it again. But basically, it can range anywhere between $3 per thousand views to like $13 per thousand views. And that depends on the geography of where that person is watching from, the language they're watching the video in, and the topic. So just as an example, the worst possible, you know, CPMs would be, you know, in a foreign language in a third world country about, you know, some topic that's hard for advertisers to advertise on, right? So if it's in like, you know, if it's in like Hindi about, you know, animal abuse or something, like, and only like, well, Indians are watching it, you're not going to do it very
context,
well.
In this context, my car channel, almost every time I've watched a video of mine, the pre-roll will be a car ad. So if you think about the commercials you see on TV, if you even still have TV or streaming or whatever it may be, whatever products you see on there, I think that's kind of a good strategy. Whatever you see on there, you'll see a lot of car commercials. You'll see, you know, prescription drugs or whatever it may be. I think maybe that's the key too to finding like the higher paying things. I know like in the financial space we are here at Invest Like a Boss, you know, per listener, I think, you know, finance pays a lot more. That's why you see a lot of these big finance YouTubers do so well. Those guys will make a lot more money than someone with a channel the same size in a topic that's, you know, not as hot of a topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the finance space, and if it's American audience in English, they're probably making $30 to $40 per thousand views. So if you do the math on that, you know, for let's say 10,000 or like 100,000 views, they might make as much as $4,000. So a million views, they might make $40,000, which is pretty insane. Yeah.
But some of those guys can do that on a consistent basis. So, yeah.
You know, if I was smart, I would be making, you know, videos for... I'll probably have stuck to, like, business stuff. Because when I was kind of a digital nomad and I was talking about business stuff, I made a much higher CPM. My audience was smaller because my quality wasn't that good. And, you know, I didn't use, like, catchy headlines or anything. Like, I was just kind of vlogging about my day or kind of what I'm doing. But there's some videos I made that made, you know, that did really well. Like my highest grossing videos weren't the ones that had the most views. It was the ones that were in that, you know, kind of that business space.
Interesting. Any other spaces that kind of stick out? Travel kind of seems like, is it just too flooded? Like there's too many people doing travel?
Travel is the absolute worst niche possible because first off, it costs money to travel. Right? Second, it takes time and energy.
It costs, you know, money to get cars too, FYI.
Yeah. Cars are hard as well. Yeah. You know, I would say like makeup is probably the best because you're interested in makeup, you're probably buying it anyways. And eventually
it's expensive.
You're eventually just going to get free stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, if you like get good enough. you can do it from home in the same spot. Like, you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to travel anywhere. You can just sit in front of your mirror and you know, set up your camera and never move it.
A friend of mine's apartment, and whoever lived there previously was like some big influencer for like celebrities and stuff. Literally every week, products still coming to their door, all the, like expensive products. So it's kind of funny. Like, they just haven't changed the address, and there's still like thousands of dollars of stuff coming in all the time.
Wow. Is this makeup or something actually useful?
It's like hair stuff and like all kinds of products. It was some kind of like celebrity hairdresser makeup type person, but yeah, it just shows up at the door all the time.
Yeah, you know, if I lived in the US, I would happily just put my PO box out there and just get a bunch of free stuff,
right?
But living in Ukraine, like, it's always sorry, we can't ship there, or
yeah, I guess I get the fruits of that with iLab. It doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while they'll be like, hey, do you want a sample of this or that? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, how about the other guys? I'm like, I don't think they can get it.
Yeah, so pick your poison, guys. Like, if you're gonna get into the influencing space or the content creating space, I would recommend sitting down and making like a business plan, and not just saying, I just want to make videos about something I'm interested in. You know, that's good to keep you going. And like, if you weren't interested in cars, you wouldn't have the motivation or drive to have a, you know, automotive channel. But at the same time, if you don't have a little bit of kind of the business basics, you're never going to make money from it. Not going to continue it.
Totally. I got one more question for you, Johnny, that I'm curious about. Let's do that. And then we'll hit a few Patreon questions and we'll get out of here. So this is what I was thinking. You know, you and I are comfortable on camera, on a microphone, things like that, but there's a lot of people out there that aren't. Do you think there's a chance that someone could do YouTube as a side hustle or even a main job if they're not on camera, or any kind of channel ideas for someone that doesn't feel comfortable being in front of the camera?
Yeah. Absolutely. So right now, the channels that I watch daily, some of them I've never even seen their face. There's one guy who does daily map updates with, you know, using open source information about the war, and he does a voiceover. So,
oh, that's interesting. Like where the front lines are and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or reviewing news for the day. You know, so yeah, you still have to use your voice, but you don't have to be on camera necessarily. Other people, you know, they write scripts and just have someone else like read them. You know, so for example, who's that guy?
I could do that.
The Today I Found Out guy. I don't know, but like there's a couple like, you know, YouTube personalities where they're not doing any of the writing, and they're probably not paying their staff as much as they deserve. But if you're the one, you know, saying, I'm going to create the content, I'm going to create the back end, I'm going to create the storyboard, you could probably find someone to read it for you for not that much money. You know, and now it's AI, so you don't even need that. Like, you can literally type it out, just have the AI voice to read it out for you. Yeah.
All right, we're missing out on so many opportunities here, Johnny.
Yes. However, I'm going to warn you. You have to do a good job, and just don't fall for the trap of, say, you know, of spamming YouTube and saying, I'm going to create a bunch of top 10, you know, lists and have a crappy voiceover read it.
Right.
Because I hate those things. And
me too. I've been seeing a lot of TikToks and shorts with those too. And I tune out right away.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't think any of them do well. Like, I think people are just wasting their time. I think, like, if you're okay making $3 an hour, like, you know, go for it. And then I hope people block you and report you as spam. But like, in general, I don't think those are worth it. I think if you want to be a content creator, you either have to team up with someone who wants to be in front of the camera, or you have to be the one that's comfortable in front of the camera.
All right. All good information. And speaking of ads, we need to take an ad break to get paid here on the podcast too. Really quick. We'll be right back. We're going to hear from our Patreons because they got some questions for you as well, Johnny.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, we're back. If you didn't know, we have a Patreon here on Invest Like a Boss. You can check it out. It's investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon. And one of the perks in there is you can ask us questions, or our guests, whoever may be on. You get a little sneak peek of what's coming up on the episodes in there that's not available to anyone else. And Johnny, no surprise, because you're such a huge, giant star on YouTube, some people have some questions.
Okay, ask away.
All right. John Spencer asks, if your growth has stalled on YouTube, how do you think you can get your channel growing again?
You know, I actually had this slump for a while and I couldn't figure it out. I just took a break. I took a mental break. I took a couple of weeks off, and I thought that would actually just make it worse. And technically it did. Like, for those couple of weeks, I made less money. But first I had a mental kind of break, and I said, you know what, let me come back with a fresh pair of eyes and not just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And when I came back, you know, I decided, I was like, I'm going to change up the style a little bit. You know, I'm going to make like kind of different thumbnails, different titles. It's one of those things, like having a stagnant channel, like it's not the worst in the world as long as you're already monetized and you're doing pretty, you know, decently well. But it just sucks when you have a small channel that's not doing very well and it's not growing. That's when you need to mix it up and you're like, how can I get an audience from somewhere else? Whether it's being featured in someone else's video or, you know, trying to get someone with a bigger name than you in yours, or just going somewhere that's actually like in trend, happening to be somewhere that is popular that people are searching for anyways. So let's say if you're in the US, you can, if you make a video about the Taylor Swift concert, I'm sure you're gonna get a lot of videos because a lot of people are gonna, you know, start to see what it's like at a Taylor Swift concert, you know?
That makes sense, totally. It kind of feels like trend hopping, but it's something you gotta do.
Yeah. Exactly. Or, you know, if you can get someone with a bigger name, you know, whether, you know, it's not going to be Taylor Swift, right? But if you can get someone that has a bigger channel than you, you know, if you can either be in their video or they can be in yours, that's another way to kind of jump the line.
Yeah. Or from like, you know, even my car aspect, I ordered a new car and it was the very first day it came out. And I was like, I have to get this video out today because this is the first day that you can do that. That video did the best of any of my videos I've ever done in one day, but then it was gone. You know, 2 days later, no one cared anymore. But if you're doing the trend thing, you got to move fast and have that stuff out when the trend is happening. You can't wait.
Yeah, you got to be timely. You know, like I like Marcus Brownlee for his iPhone reviews or his tech reviews, not because he's the first, but because I know he's going to take his time and make really good content. But for him to have earned that right, you know, to be able to be last and still be watched, he, you know, it took a long time. But if you want to compete, you have to be the first one to make a video about the latest iPhone 15 coming out. You know, as soon as Apple announced it, you have to like be ready to publish within an hour if you want any chance of being seen.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's move on to AJ's question. AJ, I'm going to skip the first half of your question because we already touched on most of that about Johnny's approach to filming. But he does want to know, because I actually posted the picture. He was asking about the picture I put in Patreon. It was you and Bald together with your YouTube trophy. He wants to know if you have any plans to film with Bald again in the future.
Not anytime soon. I'm in Ukraine. He's banned from both Ukraine and Russia, ironically.
That's a long story, but
yeah. So he's not coming here anytime soon. And I honestly don't even know where he is. Like, he might be in South America or something. I don't know. I'm at a point right now where, like, even though I'm sure it'll be good for my channel to be in his videos or for him to be in mine, like it's not, you know, my priority to do that. And then, like, personality wise I think ever since the war happened, me and him like just kind of drifted apart a bit. So, you know, I still always give him credit for mentoring me up to this point, helping my channel grow, but we're definitely very different people now. So yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be in his videos anytime soon, but you know, like, you know, we still keep in touch once in a while, like literally like once a month or something, I might get a message from him. And if we're ever in the same city or something, we'll hang out again.
Cool. And then Jeffrey has a comment that I think we can both speak to, and then a question. He says, I love your YouTube channel and we share the same love for fixing our Cayennes. His Porsche Cayenne is 2 years old and he's had many issues with it, but he doesn't care because it's a great car to drive. First off, touch on the Cayenne part. Johnny, how is your car running right now, first of all?
Surprisingly well, actually.
If you weren't aware, Johnny got what he thought was a bargain Porsche Cayenne, which I think he did get a bargain, but we're learning that these cars have a lot of problems.
No, you know what? Okay, so to be fair, my car doesn't have more problems than any other car, you know, that's like 2008, but it's like 14 years old. And especially when that sits around and I don't drive it for 2-3 months and just let it kind of deteriorate. Mm-hmm. I think it just has like a normal amount of problems. But because I make it so public, you know, people are like, oh, it seems like Johnny's always in the shop.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, put this into context. If Jeffrey's Cayenne is 2 years old and he has a lot of problems, my Mazda is 5 years old and I have zero problems. So let's just go with that.
Okay, we'll just say that.
Anyways, his question is, do you think you could be at 500,000 or more followers now if you glorified your situation in Ukraine instead of just being authentic? He said he sent a lot of his friends your direction because you do a great job at showing daily life and videos in Ukraine.
Yeah. I mean, okay, if I wanted 1 million subscribers or, you know, 500,000 subscribers, I would lean extremely left or extremely right, you know, or extremely this, or extremely that. You know, I would say, you know, I would like for Ukraine, I would either talk about how great everything is, how amazing, you know, how Ukraine's going to like kick an ass and everything, and just do daily updates on how amazing everything is. Or I would go on the other side and it's complete trash everything. Be like, oh man, everything's terrible. Look how bad life is. Either way, whenever you have this like controversy or in your extreme, like you're going to get a lot of followers. I refuse to do that. You know, this is what I hate about people like Tucker, you know, Carlson, or, you know, any other like media personalities that just go so extreme, and either they're just insane and just like, you know, or most likely they're just greedy and they're just like, you know what?
They know
if I create controversy, I get more comments, I get more watch time, I get more shares, you know, I get more of those kind of loyal followers.
Right.
And I don't want to do that. Like, it's not my style. The only thing that I do, I'll admit this here, because if anyone's listening an hour in, it's a little secret, is I will purposely leave in like stupid things that I do that a normal YouTuber would cut out just to not look like an idiot. But I don't mind if people think, you know, they laugh at me at my expense. You know, I'm like, okay, I'll let people think I'm a little bit dumb. Like sometimes
what sucks is the like shorts I've done that have done the best are me just looking like a moron, but I'm like, you know what? But it creates kind of like a commentary. And then, you know, once multiple people start talking, I think that's when, you know, it hits algorithms that like, oh, people are talking about this, but then it's at my expense.
Yeah, that's okay. Don't worry about it.
Well, awesome. I'm glad we got this kind of insights into your YouTube life, Johnny, because we don't seem to touch on it too often on Invest Like a Boss, but it really is an option for a lot of people now if you want, you know, a side hustle, or in your case, basically a main hustle.
Well, do you know what the number one job aspiration for middle school kids are nowadays?
I think it's a YouTuber now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's no longer astronaut. It's no longer sports star. It's YouTuber, you know? So I'm glad I've been able to kind of fill that part in. Like my little, my niece and my nephew, like they're proud when they tell their friends at school, like, oh, my Uncle Johnny is a full-time YouTuber.
Oh yeah, you'd be like the coolest person ever. So yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's hard. It's literally like trying to make it.
I'm a year in. I'm still not making. I haven't made a dollar on YouTube.
Yeah, it's one of those tough things. It's a grind. Every once in a while, you'll get someone who's their very first video just pop off. I forgot her name, Jenna something. But I'll explain the video and you'll see exactly why her first video got 1 million views. Right, decent filming, like, you know, nothing crazy, but decent audio, decent filming. Everything was stable. Right, topic van life, and this was 2 or 3 years ago when it was really hot. Speaking of hot, she's a very attractive young black woman. Like, she's probably like in her early 20s, but also she is the first black woman doing van life that was very public. Mm-hmm. You know, so all of a sudden, you know, you have a hot topic, but also you have a niche. And then third or fourth, whatever it is, she had not like, you know, some cool Mercedes Sprinter van that everyone else had, but she had this like retro van that had like, you know, pink like velvet in there.
I just found her.
Yeah. And then she has a pet snake, you know. So just like all these things that just kind of made.
Is it Janelle? Janelle Eliana? That's her.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it just made like her stand out compared to everyone else. And literally from day one, she did well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you just got to be ridiculous. I live in a van with a snake. You know, that's a good headline.
Yeah. So it's timing, it's your personality, it's the way you look, you know, it's topic, it's everything combined on how fast you can grow. But what I like is also you can be, you know, a relatively normal person and still have a chance. As long as you're consistent, you grind, and you know, you make interesting videos that people actually want to watch.
Good to know. Well, on that note, I think we should get out of here. But if you want to learn more, we'll put the links to both Johnny and my YouTube channels in the show notes. And any other information you want to know, hit us up on Patreon.
Yeah. And actually, what we're going to do, Derek, if you want to stay on for another 10 minutes, I'm going to show the Patreons my dashboard of how much money I make. And I'm also going to disclose the NDA, like the sponsor money that I'm not supposed to talk about publicly, but I think on the Patreon I can talk about it. So I'll talk about how much each sponsor gives me, how I get the sponsors, how much actually money I make per month from old videos, new videos, all that. So if you guys want to watch that, it's going to be a video on Patreon that's going to be live right now.
Okay, I don't even know that information, so I'm 100% staying on for that. All right, let's get out of here. Catch us on the Patreon if you want to see how many tens of dollars Johnny is rolling in.
Could be tens of thousands, guys. Who knows? We want the Patreon.
We will find out. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.